Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening for March 27th, 2022. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, and this is our stupendous edition of Wrestling Night in America, where we preview WrestleMania. Okay, every episode of Wrestling Night in America is stupendous, but of course, it's a play on WWE calling WrestleMania stupendous this year. But we will preview both nights of WrestleMania here tonight on Wrestling Night in America. We'll also talk a little bit about whatever you want to talk about by calling in 515-605-9345, emailing us wnialivecast@gmail.com. Some of the other big shows that we could certainly discuss tonight, even as we focus on both nights of WrestleMania, we have the NXT Stand and Deliver show, which will take place Saturday afternoon prior to night one of WrestleMania. And any other week of the year, this would be pretty big news. ROH's Super Card of Honor, which will take place April 1st, which is, I believe, Friday night. So this is the first ROH show under the AEW banner, booked by Tony Khan, who purchased ROH a few weeks ago. And that's kind of a big deal, although it certainly is not being seen as such because it is WrestleMania season, because of all the major independent shows running all around Dallas this year where WrestleMania will take place. So that is something else we can discuss here tonight as well. Before we bring on my co-host here tonight and get to the actual preview, I do want to mention that next weekend, both Saturday and Sunday, Wrestling Night in America will be on the air with our WrestleMania post-show. That goes for night one and night two of WrestleMania. So we're not just having a WrestleMania post-show after Sunday night's night two. We're actually going to have it Saturday night and Sunday night. So double the Wrestling Night in America next week with me. So happy to do that. It's a big WrestleMania, stupendous, if you will, if you want to use WWE's terminology for it. But certainly a big show worthy of two nights of Wrestling Night in America. So again, our post show will go on the air right after WrestleMania goes off the air. Both of those nights, nights one and two, you can catch it right here on pwtorchdailycast.com. And, of course, you can be a part of the show by calling in after the night one and night two of WrestleMania, Saturday and Sunday night. And you can also email us, wnialivecast@gmail.com. So without further ado, now that we have all the housekeeping out of the way, I'm happy to bring on my co-host who will help me run down the WrestleMania card here tonight, Dr. Bruce Hazelwood, PWTorch.com contributor. Dr. Bruce, thank you for hanging out with me here on a Sunday night for me, Sunday afternoon for you, all the way over there in Hawaii.
Yes, it's just past two here. Thank you for having me on. And full disclosure, when you I didn't realize until last night, because I don't keep track of the date anymore, that we're actually going to be previewing WrestleMania and arguably the biggest weekend in all professional wrestling. So just throwing that out there for everybody. But also, Greg, after next weekend, you're going to have to take another vacation. It's going to be a lot of work. So hopefully you don't get worked. You know, you don't lose all your energy next week.
Yeah, I hope not. I don't see that being the case. WrestleMania is always a fun time. And even when the shows are bad, they usually give you something to talk about. So I think no matter what happens, and I'm gonna regret saying this, I know, but I think it's gonna be anything but boring next weekend. So at least we'll have something to sink our teeth into, something for callers to react to, something for emailers to have questions about after both nights of WrestleMania next weekend. But yes, it will be. I'll have my energy drinks or my caffeinated soda with me on both of those nights. For sure. Dr. Bruce, you know, you mentioned not even realizing that this was the WrestleMania preview show. Now, as we always have to say here on Wrestling Night in America, when we're previewing an upcoming pay-per-view, a lot can change in the 6 days in between now and then, 5 days, because it's on Saturday. So we have a Raw go-home show. We have a SmackDown go-home show. So things could change, whether the matches – have added participants, whether matches get added to the pay-per-view, whether matches get moved around from night one to night two or vice versa. So this is not necessarily the absolute final write-it-in-pen card, but it's the card as it is today as we sit down here and discuss this. Night one, we'll start going match by match through this, Dr. Bruce, and we'll talk about Dominic and Rey Mysterio against The Miz and Logan Paul. Logan Paul, one of two celebrity matches that are taking place here on WrestleMania. And, you know, it was funny, after the Royal Rumble, when I wrote my column, as I do every year, looking ahead to WrestleMania and the potential matchups, I wrote that Rey Mysterio was the one really big name that didn't seem to have a really solidified direction after the Royal Rumble, but he was a name you knew would be involved in WrestleMania in some way. And in fact, my column in the upcoming Torch newsletter looks back at my kind of crystal ball predictions of the WrestleMania card after the Royal Rumble. But, you know, what do you think of Rey and Dominic here being involved with The Miz and Logan Paul? To me, you know, I know most people can take or leave Logan Paul, but he's the sort of celebrity that it makes sense for Miz to want to cozy up to. We know that Miz is a sort of a Hollywood wannabe. That's his character. So to cozy up to someone the level of Logan Paul and to be involved in a celebrity match at WrestleMania just sort of fits, I think, with the Miz character. So this is a match that I think is somewhat fitting in that, you know, it's something that you would see the Miz character wanting to be involved in.
Yeah, and, you know, the Paul brothers, regardless of what you think about them, they drop eyeballs. You can look at their pay-per-view boxing matches, and there's proof of that with all the buys they get. So it's also interesting because it's the second consecutive WrestleMania now where The Miz is involved in the celebrity match, because last year was Bad Bunny. And with this one, I think what they've done is, especially with the angle they pulled off on Friday, was set this up so that The Miz and Logan Paul lose the match to Rey Mysterio and Dominic Mysterio. I don't think you do the unmasking angle there if you don't want people to see Logan Paul and The Miz. And so for me, I also think you have to, you know, WWE 2K22 came out. It's actually a pretty fun game. I played through a lot of it. And the showcase mode is revolving around Rey Mysterio. And at the end of it, the secret match, you play with you team with Dominic Mysterio. So I think there are a lot of things here where all signs are pointing to the Mysterios winning. But with how WWE likes to swerve people, this might be also a time where they lose or Logan Paul turns on The Miz. So I don't really know where they're going with this, probably just because I'm not interested in this match at all. It's just not my cup of tea. But I know, I understand why people are invested, especially, you know, the more general fans, because of the association, are probably more invested. And with the cachet of the name of Rey Mysterio, I understand. It's just, I figured with Rey being the showcase, they would have more than just this for him coming into WrestleMania. Maybe he would go on a mid-card title run or something, but at least he's on the card and Dominic is on the card. He gets that experience. They get the rub. They're probably going to win. And The Miz is always great to be these kind of fall person for these types of angles and matches.
I think, you know, you mentioned the potential for Rey to do something more at WrestleMania. I think even if people like yourself and probably a lot of others don't believe this is a very big opportunity for Rey Mysterio, even if he is on WrestleMania, I think WWE looks at it differently. I think they see Logan Paul and they see the use of celebrities and the kind of publicity that Logan Paul could conceivably get them. And I think they see this as a marquee matchup that they're using Rey Mysterio for. Now, like, again, I agree. I don't see it that way, but I think because WWE just has a history of being sort of starstruck for celebrities, that they think by putting Rey in a match with a celebrity, it's a big deal. You know, I think both scenarios you laid out for this match could be correct, where Rey and Dominic win, Miz gets mad after the match, starts, you know, putting his finger in Logan Paul's chest and blaming him for losing, and then Logan Paul turns on the Miz. So I think both of your scenarios could be correct there for the outcome of this match.
It would also he's actually a trained boxer now. So having Paul knock him out with a punch and then selling for that like he does, I think would be a great way to kind of culminate that angle and send them off into the next match.
Moving over to SmackDown, we have Drew McIntyre versus Happy Corbin. Now, you want to talk about somebody who you would have predicted bigger things for on the WrestleMania card. Drew McIntyre would be a case study in that. McIntyre has really carried the ball for WWE over significant lengths of time over the last 2 years, and to see him in a match against Corbin is sort of disappointing. You know, he had that injury, the neck injury, where I think at first people thought he was going to be out for longer than he was, so perhaps they had sort of written him off of WrestleMania, and then when he was able to come back sooner than expected, they just kind of threw something together for him. Then again, you know, this Corbin match has, or this feud with Corbin and Madcap Moss has been going on for months now, certainly past its use-by date, I would say. So I'm surprised that they couldn't find something better for him to do at the last minute, and they're running McIntyre Corbin out there again. But this could be a situation, again, similar to the last match, where people don't look at this as a really big opportunity for Drew McIntyre, but those inside WWE may see it differently. We know that they are higher on Baron Corbin, the wrestler, than a lot of fans and a lot of outside observers. And I think they're higher on this Happy Corbin character. He gets a lot of TV time on SmackDown. So WWE seems higher on this character than a lot of people do. So maybe this is another case of WWE thinking that this is a better opportunity for Drew McIntyre than a lot of fans see it as.
I will give Happy Corbin, I'll go with his current name, some due here. He's fine in the ring to me. I think there was definite improvement from when he first started to where he is now. The thing, though, is his characters the last several years, going back to the Constable, to the only good part was when he was down and out Corbin and had all the stains on his shirt and wasn't shaving. That was perfect. That was a perfect character. But then becoming Happy Corbin, it's just too – you're supposed to be over the top. You have to be believable in being over the top. And his character – as Happy Corbin has just been go away heat for most people, including me. I do tend to agree with Wade that they're probably setting up McIntyre to be the challenger for whoever comes out with the unified title for SummerSlam. And this is kind of starting that path, but I don't know how many people are going to look back at a WrestleMania match between McIntyre and Corbin and be like, yeah, that is where his run should have started. This feud, so in 2K22, in my GM mode, if you have a feud, go past level 4, you try to book it again, it'll say feud is stale. Like you said, this is way past being stale. So if they were playing 2K22 my GM mode, they would not succeed right now, and especially with this feud. And generally, they do this with a lot of their feuds. It's just over and over again, and this is where the lack of depth and other releases come into play, but it's always that debate between having more of an ensemble cast like AEW or having more of a top-heavy cast like WWE. And this is where it really bites them when you're trying to stretch your biggest show of the year into two nights.
And I was actually thinking that when you brought up what Wade had said about this being the springboard in a way for Drew McIntyre, I think it's pretty solid that he wins this match and, feuds with Roman Reigns here soon. Do you think they can really hold that off to SummerSlam? I see this Drew McIntyre getting the victory here and really perhaps even the next month getting into a feud with Roman Reigns, whether or not Reigns comes out of the match with Brock Lesnar as champion. You know that even if Reigns loses the winner-take-all match, he's going to have something significant to do on SmackDown. So do you agree with Wade that they can hold off to SummerSlam? I'm not sure that they can. I think it happens before then.
I think it's all dependent on what they do with the unified titles. Do they have Roman defend against, how do I put this? Does he have challengers from both shows but defends once, doesn't defend twice in a night or twice a pay-per-view or whatnot? Like they had in the past with, I think, Becky Lynch and when Seth Rollins was U.S. champion, WWE champion. Or does he relinquish one of the titles and they go back to having two champions again? I think if they have a singular unified title and it's Roman has his one challenger per month, or maybe on a special SmackDown, a second challenger, and it could be from both shows, and they could definitely extend McIntyre to SummerSlam. But then you have to think about, well, would you rather have Bobby Lashley versus Roman Reigns at SummerSlam? Would you rather have, say, the winner of Edge versus AJ Styles versus Roman Reigns at SummerSlam? So I think at least what you have here is, if they go down the path of a singular unified title, that you have a plethora, or not a plethora, but you still have multiple options for top-tier challengers to presumably Roman Reigns if he wins the title on Sunday, or Brock Lesnar, either way. With Lashley, you have the built-in story that he, you know, Lesnar didn't legitimately beat him for the title. You could build that into Lashley challenging Reigns either way. The winner of Edge versus AJ Styles, you could do the same thing. If Orton and Riddle want to break up, maybe they lose the titles and they just want to go their separate ways, you could put Orton back into the title picture. I think there's a lot of ways they can make this last until SummerSlam. But again, if they just go back to having, if he relinquishes one of them, or either of them relinquish one of the titles and they go back to having two titles, then that is where I don't think they can extend it to SummerSlam.
The SmackDown tag titles are on the line when the Usos defend against Shinsuke Nakamura and Rick Boogs. This one sort of came out of nowhere, Bruce, as Shinsuke Nakamura not that long ago was Intercontinental Champion. And then he lost the belt to Sami Zayn. Zayn lost it to Ricochet. And Nakamura and Boogs were sort of spun off into a feud with the Usos, who had been feuding with the Viking Raiders and so on and so forth. And certainly this feels much more like a Challenger of the Month type match than it does anything that's been big building to this match here at WrestleMania.
Well, so back to Nakamura's IC reign first. You forgot to mention he rarely defended the title, if at all, during his entire reign. I think Ricochet has already defended
right.
the title more times than Nakamura has since he's won it. So there's that. I hear your point, but I'm looking at night one. Maybe, depending on what the – oh, yeah, Belair versus Lynch is not going to be the main event. So I think looking at kind of the happy moments that might come out of this, this could be a surprise title change. And I only say that because of all the attention focused on these two in terms of those little, like, vignette ads, you know, slash ads and playing during SmackDown the last couple weeks.
Yeah.
And the fans really, really like Rick Boogs. And their pairing in terms of getting the fan engagement works very well together. So I wouldn't be surprised to see them actually go over here and get the titles from the Usos. And they might only have it for a week or maybe a month, and they lose the next matchup. But this could be like the Zack Ryder winning the IC title at WrestleMania moment for them, where they win the tag titles, get that really, you know, the big pop, the feel-good moment, especially for Boogs, and then they drop the titles pretty quickly. I think that would be fine because you could always go in with the story of the Usos just were overconfident and they overlooked the kind of random mishmash team. While they've been paired as a team, they haven't been teaming as long, definitely as the Usos, but as long as some other teams on the show. So, but again, I think this is actually going to be a spot where we have a surprise title change.
And, you know, we talked about this when we talked about Happy Corbin, that it's pretty obvious when WWE likes a character and they enjoy writing for a character, or Vince McMahon enjoys a character, and Happy Corbin and Madcap Moss certainly fit that bill, but also the team of Shinsuke Nakamura and Rick Boogs and Boogs individually, they seem to have a soft spot for. They get a lot of TV time, much more than you know, you would think a character at that level would get. So I can totally see that being a title change. You just get the sense that WWE likes the, and it's entirely possible that Nakamura, part of the reason he dropped the title in the first place was because they had him pegged for a tag match at WrestleMania with the Usos. I'm not convinced that's the case 100%, but it's a possibility. Couple more matches here on night one, but to sort of reset the things as we hit the bottom of the hour, I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, being joined by PWTorch.com contributor Dr. Bruce Hazelwood. This is Wrestling Night in America for March 27th, 2022, and this is our special WrestleMania preview edition where we talk about night one and night two of WrestleMania. NXT also coming up next Saturday afternoon, ROH on Friday night, so if you want to talk about any of those topics, you can give us a call, 515-605-9345. Callers in the queue that we'll get to after we get done talking about night one. And emails can be sent to wnialivecast@gmail.com. We also have two women's matches scheduled for night one. One of them, Becky Lynch versus Bianca Belair for the Raw Women's Championship. When Ronda Rousey won the Women's Royal Rumble, it seemed pretty cut and dried to me that she would challenge Charlotte Flair for the SmackDown Women's title, that Becky Lynch and Bianca Belair would renew their rivalry. That felt like a WrestleMania match, and here we are. You know, a couple months later, we're right where we sort of expected to be. And, you know, Becky Lynch's mic work has been really good. Bianca Belair is in a groove with her character. She's very confident, not just as a character, but she knows who she is. You know, she has a handle on her presentation on television. Is there any argument you can make, Dr. Bruce, for this being the main event of night one over Charlotte versus Ronda Rousey, or is Charlotte Ronda the slam dunk choice?
If it were up to me, I mean, how much time do we have? I would put Becky Lynch and Bianca Belair as the main event, hands down. And the one main reason is the storyline between these two is far longer and more engaging than the one that has happened so far between Charlotte Flair and Ronda Rousey. Going back to SummerSlam and everything that happened there between Lynch and Belair, and then you add in the actual injury to the neck and then the worked injury to Bianca's neck, the actual injury to Becky Lynch from Bianca Belair during a house show and then with a live event, and then the angle on Raw where Becky Lynch injured Bianca Belair's neck. I know on SmackDown that they had these, you know, Charlotte Flair getting the better of Ronda Rousey in the parking lot, on car, in the backstage. It just doesn't have as much to me, both fan investment and emotional investment that Lynch and Belair have, because, again, there's been, we talk about McIntyre and Corbin being well past their feud end date. The thing that they've done with Lynch and Belair is they've kept each other at the top of their minds, even while they're feuding with other people. So I think that has done a great job of making people remember that, you know, 8 months or 10 months ago, 11 months ago, or I can't do math. Wow. About 6 months ago at SummerSlam, we had that angle that wasn't really well received by a lot of fans where Lynch just won the title so quickly. And now we have the chance for Belair to once again, two WrestleManias in a row, to end the night. Well, not end the night because she's not main eventing, unfortunately, but to emerge with a women's championship. And last year it was SmackDown. This year it's Raw. So she could win both women's titles within a year of each other. And I think that is a great accomplishment for her, especially because she did it against two of arguably the best in the business in Becky Lynch and Sasha Banks. And as two of the four horsewomen, you get add a bit of extra rub because people hold those four in such high regard.
And look, I totally get why Ronda Rousey's match and Charlotte Flair's match is in the main event. You know, I'm not trying to say like that I don't get it. Rousey is a huge star, mainstream, goes beyond WWE. Charlotte Flair is obviously someone who WWE sees as their top women's star in the division. So I get that, but I wanted to kind of throw that question to you because I don't think it's as cut and dried for a lot of wrestling fans who don't buy into the Ronda Rousey hype, who are tired of Charlotte Flair and who sort of see this feud as manufactured. And as you said, it doesn't have the history behind it that Bianca and Lynch does going back to SummerSlam of last year. And so I think there are a lot of people who could really make a good case, as you did, why Becky versus Bianca should go on last. Now, with Charlotte versus Ronda, this is the main event. This is it's been, I think the Bianca Becky feud has also been a lot smoother sailing. The storytelling and the ebb and flow of the story, they've hit on just about every beat throughout that, and Charlotte Ronda has not. You know, they've had the parking lot brawl, which some people kind of made fun of, and it was really a repeat of something they had done the last time they were building up Ronda's WrestleMania match. They had that you know, that video that was going around when SmackDown was taped of Charlotte taking that hideous table bump with her head, you know, that they were able to mask on SmackDown when they redid it. You know, you had Ronda come out and boo-boo facing her first promo because she was still mad at the fans from the last time. And, you know, so there have been a lot more bumps in the road for Charlotte versus Ronda than there has been for Becky versus Bianca. What do you think the crowd is going to be like? Are they going to be firmly on Ronda's side? The nice thing that Ronda has going for her is Charlotte's not a character that fans would protest cheer against Ronda. You know, even though Ronda's the babyface and Charlotte's the heel, I don't see a lot of fans who don't like Ronda saying, I'm going to cheer Charlotte instead, because Charlotte's not very well liked among a certain percentage of fans, but probably the same percentage that doesn't like Ronda. So what do you see that reaction to Ronda being from the crowd that night?
When you asked me that question, the first thought in my mind went to WrestleMania 20, Lesnar versus Goldberg with Austin as the ref.
Oh,
and
wow.
Remember how the fans just completely turned on that match, and they wanted no part of that. I really hope it doesn't go that way, but the feud, the meta kind of conversation around Rousey and pro wrestling, and the meta conversation around Charlotte Flair, and it just and like you said, the rocky build to this match at WrestleMania, there are just a lot of things that can go wrong with this match, especially because Rousey has not looked as nimble and as she had a baby. I'm completely understanding of that. She just hasn't seemed to have that added oomph to her in-ring since she's been back as she did the first time around. And Flair also has that kind of reputation of in the ring sometimes. When you see the match, I think about her and Nia Jax, you know, and how she tried to sandbag her a bit in that last Raw match not too long ago. And there's just kind of those things you'll see in some of her matches. So there's potential where it could go bad. I just hope that as the main event, there's probably going to be enough fans there who are going to cheer Rousey because of what she represents in the larger aspect of the last decade with her run in MMA and so forth. And then just by the fact that it's the main event, I'm going to assume there'll be a more positive effect.
Those are all the matches scheduled for night one, but we have a couple other things to talk about. One of them is Stone Cold Steve Austin on the KO show. What do you expect from this? Obviously, there's going to be some physicality. Austin has been working out. There's not going to be a full-fledged match, as has been suspected. What's your take on what we can expect, if you had to guess, from Austin being on the Kevin Owens show?
We're going to get something where it's between The Rock's 7-second match against Eric Rowan and Stone Cold coming out and giving Stunner to the New Day. We're going to get something in between those WrestleMania moments for the last several years. And if I had to take a guess, I would say Owens starts out. I don't know if he'll start WrestleMania or if he'll be kind of the come-down segment to a certain extent, where people can kind of reset themselves as he builds up the Stone Cold coming up. So I feel like Owens will be there, introduce the segment, you know, say some negative things about Texas, and then call out Austin. Austin will come out to a huge pop, of course, because, you know, once they hear the glass break and it's in Texas, they're all just going to, you know, go wild for arguably the most popular wrestler of all time. They're probably going to have a verbal back and forth a little bit. And then I'm going to say Owens is going to try and do something by spitting beer in Austin's face or doing something with the beer. And then he misses and Austin turns it on him and hits him with a stunner and does all his things, poses, takes a beer, just chums a bit, and then walks away. I think that is more than enough for me. I don't need to see Austin in another match. I was born in 88, so I was 8 to 10, 8 to 12 during his run, so my formative wrestling years. I'm fine with that. I don't need him to come back and have an actual match. Him doing what he's done the last several times he's been at WrestleMania is perfectly fine for me. And I think what's the most intriguing for me here is the verbal exchange between Owens and Austin. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Do you think, and I know WWE wanted, if it was up to WWE, I think Austin would be having a match here. Do you think there's any chance that Austin gets in the ring, does a little bit of physicality with Owens, and comes out of that and says, you know what, I think I am comfortable enough to do a match? Do you think that's a possibility here, or is it just the ship completely sailed on Austin ever doing a match again?
From what I've heard in different podcasts and from reading different sources, he actually has a ring that he's been working with back at his ranch, or back at his he's in California now. So the fact that he has a ring there leads me to believe that he's been working on taking bumps again, getting familiar with them, and testing out his neck especially. And if everything goes well with Owens in an actual live environment, something that's not practiced and rehearsed to the extent of training at home, then I think we might see something towards next WrestleMania where Austin maybe faces Owens, but maybe faces someone else. We could have night one where Austin is facing someone, and night two where Roman Reigns is facing The Rock. So there is definitely a possibility, just based off of the reports I've heard and read, about Austin having a ring to train with.
Wow. Could you imagine The Rock and Steve Austin wrestling on the same WrestleMania again, just like old times? Unbelievable.
It would be 20 years since WrestleMania 19.
Yeah. That unbelievable. Wow.
And that was the last time they wrestled at a WrestleMania, which was in Seattle. I used to live in Washington, so I always hold WrestleMania 19 close to my heart. But to think that 20 years later, at WrestleMania 39, we could have those two again main eventing on both nights. Yeah. That would be, if I was WWE, I could see why they want Austin to get back in the ring. I would definitely try to build towards that.
Crazy. One more thing to talk about before we go to the phones, and that is the match that's not been announced for WrestleMania yet, with less than a week left, and that is Cody Rhodes versus Seth Rollins. And with five matches on night one and six matches on night two, I think the expectation is it would happen on night one. A lot of rumors about what's going on with Cody. First he was in WWE, then he was on the fence, now he's back in, allegedly, but we still don't have a match announced yet. Do you see something being set up on Raw this Monday night to lead us into Saturday, or is it going to be just a complete last minute, he shows up Saturday or Sunday for WrestleMania to fight Seth Rollins, or maybe he doesn't show up at all? Like, who knows? But what's your take on what's going to end up happening, how this Cody Rhodes versus Seth Rollins deal is going to unfold?
If it was me, Seth would go into Mania, and he just – so he sees something by showing a message he had with Vince McMahon about meeting with him in the office.
Yes.
Okay. If I was WWE, I would actually just not have Seth on the card or put him in the Battle Royal. And here's why. Since the news came out that Cody was not going to re-sign with AEW and probably re-sign with WWE, I've been trying to put forth a scenario where either – I'm assuming whoever wins the Unified title will start kick off Raw with the promo, the Raw after Mania, which, as we've come to find out the last couple of years, the quote-unquote Raw after Mania we kind of came used to. Mm-hmm. For me, I think the ideal – you were talking about, so if Roman Reigns wins, if they could extend a feud out to SummerSlam. Well, I've been trying to push forth that what should happen is during Roman Reigns' promo, after he wins the Unified title on Raw, presumably on Raw, all of a sudden, the music just goes, wrestling has more than one royal family, and it's Cody's entrance. And here's the reason why is, while the royal family thing was initially a poke at McMahon and Paul Levesque, arguably the most royal family in all of professional wrestling is Jan Elias. So I think with the meta-narrative and then his music and just everything about how he's built himself up the last several years since you left WWE, I think you hold off on Cody and don't put him at Mania. Put him on the Raw after to interrupt the promo and set up a feud between Cody and Roman Reigns. Because WWE is going to pay him like they believe he is the star he is, bring him in and package him like you believe him to be the star that you think he is. And the best way to do that is to put him face-to-face with Roman Reigns in his first feud.
Interesting. Yeah, I do think, you know, especially not only the Samoan family that Roman Reigns comes from, the wrestling lineage, but that's a big part of his character. You know, he's the head of the table for his family. And so that would fit in. The bloodline. That would fit in there as well. So we will preview night two after we get to a few phone calls here. The first is 814. It's Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, welcome to our WrestleMania preview edition of Wrestling Night in America. What's your first question for us tonight?
My first question is, I attended the Road to WrestleMania last night in State College, and the most interesting thing from that show was that Roman Reigns and the Usos acted like complete babyfaces after their match. So my question is, do you think there's a babyface turn coming this year involving them?
I'm trying to think of how that would work. I don't think it's impossible. I think any time that you have a storyline where family is your focus, I think it tends to make it easier to become a babyface. And, you know, WWE may decide that. I just keep thinking about The Rock next year. And every time I try to look forward with the Roman Reigns character, I look forward with that in mind. So if you're talking about, you know, what he's going to do this year, that focus of The Rock next year at WrestleMania is always in the back of my mind. Like, who's going to win, The Rock or Brock Lesnar? Well, I would say, Roman Reigns or Brock Lesnar. I would say Reigns, because they want him to be as strong as possible to face The Rock next year. And if they have to keep him undefeated for another entire year, then they'll do that. Like, that's how big WWE thinks that match could be next year at WrestleMania. You know, we're talking about Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar. WWE's billing it as the biggest WrestleMania match ever. Well, they're going to have to use that tag again next year if they get The Rock. And I think The Rock comes back as a babyface. So with that in mind, looking forward like that, I don't think he turns babyface. But I wouldn't completely rule it out, Dr. Bruce. Is that something you could see potentially happening this year?
Potentially, of course, but I also tend to think of what happens at these house shows as them being a little more loose because the cameras aren't around in terms of the production cameras. So they have a little more leeway.
And not
they
necessarily canon and storyline.
Yes. Unless, you know, they want to suddenly have a title change happen that they want to hype and be like, oh, anything can happen on these house shows. Like, yeah, rarely. I think back to like with Samoa Joe beat Finn Balor for the NXT Championship at a house show and I think Lowell, Massachusetts. In 2015, maybe? That there's some little NXT history for you if I got my dates correct. But I'm like you in that every time Roman Reigns has tried to be a face, except for his first Royal Rumble run where he almost eliminated the record that Kane had, and that's the one where Bautista won, not Bautista, but Bautista, he just hasn't had the response from fans as a face. And I think the equity he's built up as a heel does help, but he just seems to be more comfortable and more invested in himself as a heel than any time when he was a face. When he was a face, it just seemed too forced. So I do think it can happen because you have the family tie. You can easily turn Paul Heyman and them face with one promo. You can turn The Rock heel with one promo. They could all do that. And I do think, you know, say what you want, he might come in with the cheers, but like I think pitting him against Cody is also another way to turn him face, because a lot of fans they still hold Cody in a certain light, not just because of what they perceive of his skill to be in the ring and what he thinks his skill to be, but a lot of the comments, a lot of the things that have happened outside the ring since he's been in AEW as well. So, yes, there's always a possibility. I think there's more of a chance, in my opinion, than Greg is giving it, just because of these other factors that may come into play. But that also takes into account that all these other factors have to come into play. So there's just a lot of things, I think, that will keep Reigns from becoming a face.
And I do think that you know, this was always the thought when Reigns was bombing as a babyface. The theory was turn him heel, and eventually the fans will him to be a babyface. And I still think that's going to happen. I still think the fans at some point will get behind him enough to turn him babyface. We're not there yet. I don't know if we'll be there this year. But I think that's when you turn him babyface, when the fans want to see him as a babyface, when he is just such a cool heel or he comes across so well as a heel that fans just kind of naturally turn him babyface and cheer him. And then the fans kind of take ownership of that babyface turn. It's not WWE saying, we're turning him babyface and you like him now. It's the fans deciding that. And that's where the power lies. So I think that's when you do it. I'm not sure it happens this year. Again, especially with The Rock tentatively on the calendar for next year's WrestleMania. Ryan, we'll go back to you for your second question for us.
Hey, my second question is on the actual Roman Reigns match that happened last night. It was a championship match against Drew McIntyre. And my question is, do you think they'll follow the same format as that match if they decide to do that match after WrestleMania? Basically, it was McIntyre trying to hit the Claiborne kick, and Roman countered with the Superman punch, and McIntyre was able to kick out. And then he went for a second Claiborne kick, and hit the spear for the pinfall. And Drew did make a promise for that match, saying he was to take him to Drewplex City, and they did like a spot where it took him like about 2 minutes to get the suplex in as they exchanged like reversals on a suplex. So at least he was able to pull it through on his promise.
Yeah, usually, you know, sometimes house shows are where WWE gets guys comfortable with each other, sort of practicing out matches before they put them on television together in a match. And sometimes they're just house show gear type matches, right, where it's just you want to send the crowd home happy and all that. I'm not sure how much in this day and age where they rehearse so much of the matches that running through them at house shows is what you're going to see on TV. I think they kind of rehearse them enough the day of and all that kind of stuff where I don't know, unless you've got somebody completely new up from NXT who hasn't worked main roster before, or you have someone else coming in from another company who you want to work with the wrestlers, then maybe you put them on a house show loop. But I'm not sure there's as much need for that in this day and age as there was in the past. But, you know, on the other hand, it wouldn't surprise me, given how Roman Reigns' matches usually go, there's a certain formula to them. And if he comes out of the match against Brock Lesnar as champion and faces Drew McIntyre sooner than later, Bruce, it wouldn't surprise me for McIntyre, you know, Reigns' matches to follow that formula.
John Cena matches had a formula. Randy Orton matches had a formula. Drew McIntyre matches as champion had a formula. And Roman Reigns matches definitely have a formula. So I also don't think that the wrestlers of their caliber need to have these rehearsal matches on house shows, unless it's just something for them to keep loose. I also, but then when I think about it too, the spots that he mentioned, the Claymore being countered with the Superman punch, the Claymore being countered with the spear, in my head, I could see those visuals, and they make for great visuals when they happen because of the bodies in motion. And when you're talking about the suplex reversal spots and going back and forth. I mean, I love that kind of wrestling, the chain wrestling, the back and forth, the reversals, the grappling. Like, I love seeing that kind of stuff. So for me, if they do have a feud and they do this kind of match, I think I would love that, the matches they're doing on the house show that you saw. But I don't necessarily think it's a quote-unquote rehearsal for what's to come, partly because, one, they're not scheduled to feud right now, but also I don't think they are at the stage where they need to be doing these because they've been wrestling long enough in their careers and often enough in recent months that they probably are only doing it just to make sure that they keep their stamina and stay loose for the big show coming up.
And Ryan, your third and final question for us tonight.
And my final question is, they were running the cameras actually during one of the matches was the Viking Raiders and Los Mysterios match you could watch on the big screen at the Bryce Jordan Center while that was occurring, but it missed the other matches, the either to show the intro and like the after the match, they'd show, you know, the wrestler holding up the championship and getting back to dressing room. So is there a reason why they only showed one match on, like, we're filming for, like, one match and then decided to stop the cameras? You know, like, they're just, there was, like, an agreement, you know, just to show that one match, or what do you think's going on there?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, that was always the tell if they were filming a title match was going to change hands, or like at MSG, they were going to run a big angle after the match or something like that. But yeah, for a match like that, Viking Raiders versus Los Lotharios, I struggle to figure out a reason why they would do that unless, you know, for documentary purposes. I don't know if there would be something where they would need footage for that match for a WWE Network documentary. I'm not sure. I can't think of any reasons. Can you, Bruce?
The only thing I can think of is they're kind of getting a push to a certain extent in that they're at least on a TV feud, but not necessarily as a tag team. So I wonder if this is to who won the match, Ryan? Was it Viking Raiders or Los Lotharios?
The Viking Raiders won with their
okay,
where they like throw them up for that power slam move.
Viking experience. Yeah. Never mind. That throws my theory out the window. I was going to say it's somehow to build those Lotharios up. But maybe they still can as like, oh, they lost. I don't know. Maybe it just has to be for some kind of, oh, now that I think about it, maybe they're going to do one of those WWE 24 documentaries on the week of WrestleMania, and they're starting with the house shows, the Road 2, and filming some people on their road. And maybe they're focusing right now on the people that aren't scheduled for the match, any matches on night one or night two.
Interesting. Yeah. They usually do that at WrestleMania season, the WrestleMania 24. That's a good point. Ryan, thank you for the phone call. Look forward to hearing from you again soon.
Yeah, thanks for taking the call, Greg.
Yep, you're welcome. We have DJ from Miami and Reverend Keith on the line. We'll go to DJ from Miami, then we'll do a little bit of previewing night two, and then we'll go to Reverend Keith. DJ, welcome to the show. What's on your mind tonight?
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
Doing well, thanks.
Doing well.
Okay. My first thing is, they say that Bobby Lashley is going to be there Monday. Now, if he's really going to go to surgery sooner or later, I just don't like almost just taking him out and that's it. I feel like, you know, that's just a waste of Bobby Lashley and a waste of, you know, WrestleMania for him. Like, he's, you know, he's just going to act like he's hurt and that's it. Like, you know. Unless MVP is going to be this guy's mouthpiece or something. I don't know. What do you guys think? Like, at the end of the day, Almos is really not going to go up a notch just because he took out Bobby Lashley. Like, I don't understand what – I don't get it, you know. What do we?
I do think Almos would gain something there by you know, injuring Bobby Lashley. I mean, Lashley – when we last saw him, he was WWE champion. So for someone like Omos, who's still rising up the ranks of WWE, who currently does not have a WrestleMania match, by the way, and according to this graphic on SmackDown, is not scheduled to be in the Andre the Giant Battle Royal, which, you know, if he wasn't going to be on WrestleMania and you wanted to continue his push, you would think winning the Andre on Friday night would be a way to do that. So you have to assume then that maybe he is going to end up in some match at WrestleMania. And then you look at who his potential opponents could be, and certainly the rumor mill has Lashley being the guy. So I'm not sure what Lashley's status is in terms of if he's healthy enough to come back yet or if he isn't, but I'm assuming that with the rumors the way they are, that Lashley is scheduled to return. And so, you know, what do you think about Omos, Bruce? He's one of the bigger names and more pushed wrestlers who doesn't have a spot on WrestleMania yet.
The people have been saying that, oh, he's going to be in the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, but I don't even think they've announced that for the show, for either show yet. So who knows if that's even going to happen. I do understand.
They announced it for SmackDown on Friday night, the night before WrestleMania,
right,
they're going
right.
to do the Battle Royal. Yep.
Right. Right. That's right. That's right. Well, so I understand both of your arguments here. As a Lashley fan, especially what he did since his United States Championship run about 18 months ago and then with the Hurt Business and becoming WWE champion and whatnot, I still think his entrance with the full Tron and the Gold Lightning, I think that's one of the best entrances in WWE right now. I don't want him to become the fall guy for Omos. However, they need to start building up new stars 3 years ago. And one way to help Omos get over as a new star, because, I mean, let's face it, right now his promos aren't the best. He's trying. And in the ring, others create movement for him, but he does well enough with what he needs to do. There just hasn't been as much improvement as I thought there would be. So Lashley would give him a big rub because Lashley, as Greg said, is a recent WWE champion. And someone with, you know, look at Lashley's physique. Someone with that physique being manhandled by Omos is going to send a message that, you know, he can really take on anybody and could theoretically take on someone like Brock Lesnar because he took out the mask that was Bobby Lashley. Not saying that's the path, just saying that theoretically that could be played sometime down the line. And I just don't know. Maybe Seth Rollins' match is Omos. Maybe that happens. That's what he met with Vince McMahon about. I mean, Seth would be
the
person to bounce around and make a movement for Omos. Well, it would suck for Seth, yes, but it would be great for Omos in terms of creating an exciting match because of how great and talented Seth is and just all the movement and speed he could create in the ring.
Could you imagine the fans who are waiting for the Cody Rhodes match announcement, and instead on Raw they get Seth Rollins versus Omos, and the air that would go out of the Twitter balloon for those who are tweeting live during Raw. Oh, it's almost worth it just to see the reactions of fans who are expecting Cody Rhodes for it to be Omos. DJ, back to you for your second question for us tonight.
Let me, but you didn't answer the do you think that after he beats Bobby Lashley, do you think the MVP will join him, or do you think he's going to not have a mouthpiece for a while?
I don't think he needs a mouthpiece. His promos aren't great, but they're effective in getting over that he's this monster who just wants to hurt people. So, you know, if Lashley's going to be on the shelf for a long time and they want to utilize MVP, then maybe MVP does go with Omos. But I don't necessarily see it. Bruce, what do you think about the potential of that?
The pairing of Lashley and MVP is too great to break them up, no matter what. They shouldn't have broken up the Hurt Business as a four-person crew to begin with, but they can't. They just cannot break them up right now between these two people.
All right, DJ, back to you.
All right, my second thing is, I keep on seeing different things about this, you know, Briscoe canceling and this thing about ROH, and I just feel like, do you think that they cut so much on EAW, do you think that they're going to, the TBS guys are going to start cutting that out? Do you think it's going to get less violent? Do you think they're going to change something? Or do you think that it's going to keep on rolling until they get their whole quote-unquote WWE thing, like the, you know, casting and, you know, like where they're going to go with all this content? Or, I mean, it's kind of crazy how like this is really lit in a match and the Jay thing is going crazy on social media.
I don't know what you're talking about.
The Jay Briscoe thing, with you know, how they're canceling the Briscoes on TBS.
And are the Briscoes on TBS?
So he's talking about the fact that Jay Briscoe had those homophobic remarks several years ago.
We're assuming how, that that's the reason AEW hasn't signed them, because TBS doesn't want them on.
They haven't been canceled because, as far as I know, they've been wrestling the whole time, so they haven't been canceled. So I don't think we should be using that word because they never lost their jobs. But the thing is, regardless of that, there's also another issue that people aren't bringing up with the Briscoes, and that's the fact that they were blatantly having Confederate imagery as part of their whole thing for a long time. When Jay was ROH champion, his belt had Confederate flags on it, and people are overlooking the fact that they were going with a racist, completely, basically just a straight-out racist gimmick, and overlooking that because of the homophobic remarks. And yes, that's also bad, but we also have to take into context, they also have this issue with racism in the past. Whether or not it's just for the gimmick, that's never really been, they haven't really addressed kind of the views about that either. And the big thing about what the Briscoes is, people have said they haven't really publicly apologized. They beg to differ. There's a lot of different things going on. But regardless, I think that eventually they'll probably matriculate their way to AEW, but having ROH purchased by Tony Khan gives him a way to leave the Briscoes there as not just one of the anchoring acts of ROH, as a legacy act of ROH, but as a great tag team that teams from AEW can go over and have feuds with when they're not being used in a certain light within AEW. So let's be clear here. They were never canceled because they still have had their jobs and they've never lost their jobs at all. Okay. Two, there are more than just the homophobic remarks that the Briscoes have had to deal with, and it also has to do with racism. Three, ROH can serve as a vehicle for them to be associated with AEW while not being associated with AEW. And four, all of this is conjecture and theory because no one actually knows the actual reasons. Just putting all that out there.
You know, I don't know if there was speculation that maybe Tony Khan didn't like the Briscoes or didn't like what you know, the comments that they made in the past, but, you know, they are on the ROH Supercard of Honor show, which is being booked by Tony Khan. So, like you said, this is kind of
FTR.
A way for
so,
this is kind of a way for Tony Khan to have his cake and eat it, too, where he gets to utilize the Briscoes, but he doesn't have to worry about blowback from TBS because ROH isn't on TBS. So it's kind of a way to do a runaround of that. DJ, back to you for your third question for us.
But real quick, what do you think about, you know, the TBS thing that they want to, like, not have there? Do you think that now that they're saying that, do you think that the content will get a little less harsh and, you
that
know,
has
less,
nothing to do with
like
content,
a,
DJ. It has nothing
and
to do
and
with
no
the
one
content
knows
of AEW
reason.
TV shows.
I know. TBS executives were they're the ones who are blocking the Briscoes, I heard. That's why I was wondering, like, I don't even know if they watch the show and see how, you know, they cuss or they don't care about all that or, you know, compared to what they get. I don't know.
I would say they probably don't care. Again, cussing on TV is a lot different than the objectionable comments that the Briscoes have made in the past. I mean, that's not nearly the same thing. So I don't see this as a gateway for TBS to get more involved in coming down hard on the content of Dynamite or Rampage. But anyway, DJ, back to you for your final point for us.
All right, and then my final thing is the Austin thing. I feel like, do you think they're going to push this out, or do you really think this is going to be a one and done? Because I feel like it'd be good that Austin came back, like maybe he did the Owens show, and then Owens got a little best one, but then they go back to SummerSlam, and he's on the Steve Austin show. And then they end up, like you guys said, at WrestleMania or something. That would work compared to, like, him and Boom. Do you feel like Kevin Owens should get the best of them this time, or Austin should get the best of them because they're definitely in Texas? And do you think this should go up to definitely go into maybe next year WrestleMania or do something, you know, in the middle of the year or something?
Well, we did talk about the possibility of this becoming more than just a one-off if Austin felt comfortable enough to wrestle a match. They would have to get something a little deeper storyline-wise, though, because right now this storyline that is leading us into this confrontation is solely around the fact that WrestleMania is being held in Texas and Kevin Owens has proclaimed his distaste for Texans. So, you know, if this was to evolve into something that was a multi-month feud or led to another match down the line, Dr. Bruce, it would have to be they would have to get to the next page of the feud at WrestleMania on Saturday where it has to go a little deeper than just, oh, Kevin Owens doesn't like Texas.
Well, real quickly, 5 minutes ago on Twitter, WWE announced that RK-Bro will face the Usos tomorrow night on Raw, both tag team champions. So there's that. Greg, correct me if I'm wrong, but Steve Austin currently lives in Southern California, correct?
Oh, goodness. I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised with the filming of his TV show and everything. Maybe it would be there. I'm not sure, though.
So where's next year's WrestleMania, Greg? Do you know?
I'm guessing it's Southern California.
It's in Hollywood. So both The Rock and Stone Cold have connections to Hollywood. you have two WrestleManias in a row where Austin has the connection to the locale with this year's and next year's. You can definitely do what is being said about having Steve Austin have a little segment on SummerSlam with Owens, and then Austin gets the better of him again, which leads to Owens calling him out for a match at WrestleMania in Hollywood in Austin's backyard, where Austin will presumably do the honors and put Owens over. So there are definitely ways to do this. And I think ironically, the locales just seem to match up for both The Rock and Austin to be at WrestleMania next year. And they seem to have built-in feuds ready for The Rock 2 years out and for Austin a year out. So I definitely think that there is a possibility. Again, I don't need to see him in a match, but I don't doubt that it would be the most historic WrestleMania weekend ever if they had Austin on night one and The Rock on night two.
Absolutely. DJ, thank you for the phone call. I look forward to hearing from you again soon.
Yep, I'll talk to you soon.
All right, let's move on to night two, and we'll go through a couple matches here, then we'll get Reverend Keith on the line. It's a mega four-way tag team match, Zelina and Carmella against Sasha Banks and Naomi, against Rhea Ripley and Liv Morgan, against Natalia and Shayna Baszler in a women's tag title match. When I was looking at this card in writing my column after the Rumble, Bruce, I saw Sasha Banks as someone who I felt like I needed to come up with something for. You know, it was definitely going to be Ronda versus Charlotte. It was definitely going to be Bianca versus Becky. But Sasha Banks was too big of a name to leave off the card. And so I started thinking, you know, is Bayley going to come back in time? Is she going to be someone who they reignite the feud with Banks? Are they going to try to shoehorn Sasha into one of these other two title matches and make it a triple threat? Are they going to have her do something on her own? Her being in this four-way women's tag title match does seem underwhelming to me for her.
I'll disagree a little bit here, because the fans have seemingly really gotten behind the teaming of Banks and Naomi. And I think it's great for Naomi, for one. But when you watch those two, they just seem to be having fun together. And Tom Staupe and Wade on Monday talked about kind of the joy of performance that they're seeing from Randy Orton since he's teamed with Riddle and forming RK-Bro. You kind of see that joy of performance with Sasha Banks since she's come back and teamed with Naomi. And so I do disagree a little there. I understand your point, though, that this is someone we're used to seeing in women's title matches at big WrestleManias. A lot of her...
I mean, she was the main event last year.
Yes, yes. And a lot of her haters will bring up the fact that she hasn't won at WrestleMania, which doesn't really – the streak only became a thing because WWE made it a thing with The Undertaker. It really doesn't matter. To me, it shows me that Banks is someone who is willing to put others over at the expense of herself because she sees more in them going over than her winning. And that was no more evident than last year with Bianca Belair. You could see that the smile on her face as she tried to appear angry with Bianca winning, just because the moment and the jubilation and what she did for Belair. I do think that and so I see all that with Banks with her teaming with Naomi. And for me, they're the only team out of these three that has really any sort of fan support. And because of that, I think they should win. And it would also be a bit full circle for Sasha Banks with the women's tag team titles, because I believe they lost at WrestleMania in a fatal four-way match, and the Iconics won at WrestleMania. So coming back and having a fatal four-way here where she regains the titles, I think would be a nice full circle moment for her, and then it would give Naomi her first tag team championship under these kind of current titles. So I think this probably has – I think this will be the opener on night two, and I think the best way to get that going, one, you have Banks's and Naomi's entrances, which are both great, and Naomi's especially getting the fans going, but having that feel-good moment at the end where they both raise the titles high as the baby faces, as the fans cheer them on, in a great moment to start the show.
Especially with the way that Naomi has had her year go, where she has been taken out at every turn by Sonya Deville, you know, to have her standing tall during WrestleMania to win the tag titles, I think that would be a big feather in her cap and a big middle finger to Sonya Deville and showing that Naomi was able to get out from under her thumb there. I actually think this has underrated match possibilities. I saw the match that they mm-hmm. had on SmackDown with many of the competitors, and I liked it. Like, it was fast-paced. They were mm-hmm. it was boom, 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 and I think if they keep up that sort of pace in this match and keep the strong workers in there, of which there are several, I think that mm-hmm. this has an opportunity to be kind of, not a show stealer, but I think a level or two better than people would expect going in. The next match we'll talk about is Johnny Knoxville versus Sami Zayn, Anything Goes match. This is our second celebrity match of WrestleMania. Johnny Knoxville and Sami Zayn have been feuding for longer than a lot of other feuds last in WWE. So, you know, I think the best thing I can say when celebrities are involved is Johnny Knoxville is playing his role very well. Fans like yes. him. Fans have not turned on him, as they sometimes do when fans get the sense that that celebrities are treating them, mm-hmm. see themselves mm-hmm. above being involved in wrestling. And I don't think we get that with Johnny Knoxville. So, no. Johnny Knoxville, Sami Zayn, Anything Goes match. What are the chances that the cast of Jackass gets involved in here?
Oh, 105%. So,
off the charts.
I will say, going back to last year with Bad Bunny and then this year with Knoxville and Logan Paul, who has been posting videos of him training in the ring recently with The Miz, they seem to have found the right sort of celebrity who's going to invest not just in the character that they're putting forth, but in the storyline. And as we saw with Bad Bunny last year, in the match itself with his training and all that. So we're definitely going to see the Jackass cast. It seems to me that Knoxville has taken the spot of Shane McMahon for his annual WrestleMania bump, and we know Knoxville is going to do something ridiculous. But how should I put this? The man's been taking bumps longer than some of the people that are on the card. He's been taking bumps almost as long as Rey Mysterio, basically. So whatever they do will be ridiculous, but it'll be safe. It'll be funny. Might not be funny unless Sami Zayn gets involved. Of course, whatever he does is fun and entertaining. The stunt might just be one of those oh my god moments. But they both have just done fantastically with what they've been asked to do in this feud. And I just want to commend Sami Zayn, not just for his out-of-the-ring stuff with what he does for Syria and all his charity work, but as a character, the last, pretty much since he started the whole conspiracy theory character, he's just been so good, so entertaining, and the reason why you want to watch the show. So kudos to him.
Yeah, absolutely. He's done a fantastic job. We'll cut night two off there for now. We'll come back to it in just a moment after we take Reverend Keith from Baltimore, Maryland. Reverend Keith, thanks for hanging on the line with us. What's on your mind tonight?
My pleasure. How you doing, Greg and Doc?
Doing well,
yeah,
thank you.
Thank you.
Listen, I thought it was ironic that Ryan mentioned the fact that Roman could possibly be turned babyface, because, you know, I discussed that way back in December with you guys. We shall see. But let me ask you guys this question, okay? Do you see any possible way that Brock comes out of this night two with both belts? Any possible way?
Yes.
Because you got to keeping in mind, you have WrestleMania Backlash in about 30 days after the, if that long, after WrestleMania. Then you have a couple other events coming up in June. So do you see a way perhaps that they could give the belt to Brock and then have Roman get it back? Reason why I say that is because, before you answer, is because I'm noticing Michael Cole keeps emphasizing the length of Roman Reigns' title reign. And normally that's mm-hmm. the kiss of death. Normally that's the precursor to whoever it is, male, female, from cruiserweight all the way up to heavyweight champion, potentially losing their belt. So that's why I brought this point up, and I wanted you to elaborate on that.
You know, I do. I think there's a chance, a very slim chance, that Brock Lesnar wins at WrestleMania. I go back to what I said earlier is, you know, whenever I answer questions about Roman Reigns, it's through the lens of facing The Rock next year at WrestleMania. And how does Lesnar beating Reigns here help get to that point? And I don't know that it really does. And so I think you want, and WWE wants Roman Reigns to be as strong as possible heading into next year's presumed match with The Rock. And I think you do that by beating Brock Lesnar here. You know, Roman Reigns has made a habit since his heel turn of beating a lot of part-timers, whether it's Edge or Daniel Bryan or whomever the case may be. And Brock Lesnar is just the biggest fish in that pond. So I think he wins. But I hold out the possibility, Bruce, that something happens and Lesnar gets the victory. Do you see it the same way I do, that it's slim, or do you think Lesnar has more of a chance that I'm giving him credit for?
I would say it's probably 70-30 that Roman Reigns wins. Let me go back to Reverend Pete's point about the belts, the title length first. I think, you know, when you brought up CM Punk having a 483-day title reign, and then they brought up, who was the other long one? I think it might have been Cena's. They tend to lose it right after, right? The only person I could think of recently who they hyped the reign but never lost it was Asuka in NXT when she relinquished the title because she went up to Raw, I believe, or SmackDown. So going back to Roman Reigns and The Rock, I believe that The Rock can easily turn heel with one promo. And when I think back to watching The Rock in the ring, I always felt he was more engaging as an in-ring worker when he was a heel because of all the little things he would do to try to win. And for me, if you want to have Roman Reigns as a face, Sunday night is where you do the double turn. Heyman turns on the Bloodline officially. You have the long con played off where he turns on them, joins Brock, helps Brock win. That sets up Reigns to be a face and the Bloodline to be a face. That way he goes back after the title. You have him be a face champion coming in and The Rock coming in as the arrogant, over-the-top Hollywood star.
Reigns,
you think you're the head of the table? I'm the one who set the promotion for you to even have a chance in the business. Go heel that way. Then you have the moment at next year's WrestleMania on night two where Reigns goes over emphatically as the baby face, gets that show of respect from The Rock to end the show, stands tall with the title. So I think there is definitely a plausible scenario that is laid out for the next year where the double turn can happen on Sunday. Reigns is the face. I'm not sure if that is the route that I would go because I do think that Roman Reigns has been so engaging and the Bloodline has been so engaging as a heel faction. But again, it's all dependent on where Paul Heyman lies. If he's going to be with the Bloodline, they're going to stay heel. But if he goes back to Brock Lesnar officially and they play the long con, then there's no doubt that they will be the faces again. And so I think just based off that possibility, there's more of a chance that I'm going to give than you are, Greg, even though I agree with you that that's not the route that I would go.
I'll push back on that a little bit because I think with The Rock coming back, people are going to want to cheer him. You know, you could turn him heel, sure, but I don't know why you would do that. Like, you have the opportunity to have the biggest star in Hollywood and you're going to get the fans to boo him? Like, I don't know why you would do that if you're WWE, because fans are going to want to cheer him. They want to hear those Rock promos where he gives those funny zingers. They want to laugh along with him. They want to cheer him putting down Roman Reigns and making lewd comments and things like that. You know, that's the Rock that fans want to see. They don't want him to come back and boo him. So I'd push back on that a little bit that The Rock should, or and I'm not even sure if you're saying should, but The Rock could easily come back as a heel. I don't know if that's the direction that I would go.
Could, not should.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
How do I put this? He could, definitely could. How do I put this? I think if that's the route they want to go, WWE should make sure that The Rock's movie that's closest released to WrestleMania next year is one where he is the evil villain. There you go.
There you go.
Wow.
Yeah, that's it right there. All right, Reverend Keith, back to you for your second question for us.
But before I get to my second point, I do want to say that I'm happy that at least one other person agrees with me that they could possibly do a double turn. I said this way back, and you recall, Greg, on your show first.
Reverend Keith, they could do anything. They could have the Roman Reigns come out in a frog outfit and hop around the ring. They could do it.
I hope not, for God's sake.
That doesn't mean they're going to. Of course they could do it.
Yeah,
I just think the chances of it are just so slim.
Yeah, but they could do it. But we'll see. I mean, you know, it makes it entertaining. I just think that from this whole angle that's been building and building and building for month after month, pay-per-view after pay-per-view, number one, Roman Reigns has always had the upper hand in this feud with Brock. Brock, all of a sudden, you know, with what he did recently backstage, destroying his car and yada yada, he's gotten the upper hand. But prior to then, he's been made Brock. Believe it or not, has been made to look like the fool. He's been on the short end of the stick, and that's not the Brock Lesnar we've known over the years since 2002. So to me, it would seem odd to just have Brock lose again after going through all of this. What would be the point of this 6-month feud, which had him look like an idiot back in January, to lose again in April? So that, I'm just saying, looking at it from that angle, I could see Brock winning, even if it's short term, you know, because again, you've got Backlash, you've got these other pay-per-views coming up, and I could see what Doc Bruce was saying, because I had predicted that back in January, that they could do a double turn at WrestleMania. But we'll see. You know, it's all in what Vince McMahon wants, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Certainly is, and I think I'd be much happier with my life if I was unable to predict what Vince McMahon was going to do, because if I was thinking like Vince McMahon, then I'm not sure I'd be very comfortable with that.
But anything can happen in the WWE, pal.
That's right.
Pretty much.
So moving on, getting off of Brock, Roman, and The Rock, I want to say that, speaking of the women's Fatal 4-Way, now, I would love – I'm a huge Sasha Banks fan. My wife used to work with her mother. Great person. She deserves the best. She has yet to win a match at a WrestleMania. However, I could also see if they didn't want to have Naomi and Sasha win, okay – I could see them putting the straps on Rhea and Liv, simply because they've been building them up too. You notice how strong they've been making Rhea look in these matches. Very strong. And just the fact that they put them two together, and Liv has come a long way. I hear she's a darling backstage working with the Four Horsewomen, you know, Becky and Charlotte and Sasha, all of them do her and hold her in high esteem. So I could see if they really wanted to put it on a face team, and they wanted to keep Naomi and Sasha both as singles competitors, I could see them putting the straps on Liv and Rhea. What do you think about that?
You know, I look at that match, and I could probably make an argument for every team
all
winning that match.
Yep.
That is... That match is as much of a toss-up results-wise as I think any match on the card, which is complicated by the fact that there's four teams instead of just, you know, two competitors there. So I think Banks and Naomi probably has to be the favorite just because
of course,
the star power, the star power that Sasha Banks has. But I do think you make a good point about Rhea Ripley and Liv Morgan. I like that team. I think it's an interesting team, and I think both of them have their arrows pointing up in terms of how they've been portrayed. You know, Liv Morgan had that short feud with Becky Lynch that was that reflected on her pretty well, and they each had a couple standout moments in the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view. So they've really done a nice job adding depth to the Raw women's roster overall. Bruce, what's your take on Reverend Keith's argument for the potential of Liv Morgan and Rhea Ripley winning this match?
So I was covering Raw when Liv had her feud with Becky over the Women's Championship. And I will say, Liv exceeded my expectations, more so in the ring than on the mic. And I think that Reverend Keith's scenario can work for both women, but especially Morgan, because one, you could split the promo duties, and that way she can learn while still getting the hands-on experience, because while Ripley isn't, you know, a Becky Lynch on the mic, she is more than passable. She does perfectly fine on the mic. So I think in that way, it helps Liv. Also, they seem to have a nice chemistry together, Ripley kind of being like, oh, I guess she can actually do some stuff, partner. And Morgan's like, I'm going to show her that I can do, you know, they seem to work well
True.
Together. And it also seems like whenever the women's champion, the women's tag team championship is on a heel team, they just seem to be lost. Unless it's like Kabuki Warriors being the tweeners or Shayna Jackson, Nia Baszler, right, where they're just kind of out there all the time. It just kind of seems like when the Iconics were champions, or right now with Carmella and Zelina, I think they're fine, but they're not really adding to the reality of the titles, even though Queen Zelina is Queen Zelina, right? So to me, it seems like a face champion is the best path right now to get those titles back onto some prominence. And while I still think Sasha Banks and Naomi should be the team to win, I do think for the reasons that have been discussed, they could go for Ripley and Morgan, and again, give a nice, happy moment and experience for the fans there and for the wrestlers. And I think as a face tag team, they have more, it seems like there are more heels in the tag team division for the women than faces, so there's more matches for them to be able to work with. So I think there's, I still say about 80% that I think Banks and Naomi are going to win, but I'd say probably 12% Ripley and Morgan, and then the rest of it goes to Baszler, Natalya, and Zelina and Carmella.
All right, Reverend Keith, your final question for us tonight.
I think only Corey Graves and the family of Carmella and them really want Carmella and Zelina to win. I don't see them retaining, but hey, I could be wrong.
They've been fine. They just haven't exceeded as champions, I should say. Or excelled. That's the word.
Yeah, that's the best. That's the operative word. You're right. It's just, they're just bland. I mean, it's just all centered around Carmella's lack of focus and her attention on her fiance, and it's taken away from them as a team, mm-hmm. even though they tried to do the fake swerve on last Monday on Raw, but
yeah.
nobody really bought it, you know. And then Zelina, I think she's just overrated at large. She's better as a manager, in my opinion, but who am I? Moving on, I like Pat McAfee, gentlemen. I like him in this role. I love it when he dances to Nakamura's music. He has so much charisma. He really does. For somebody that the former NFL punter, talk show host, media mogul, I think he does an excellent job in his role. And I think that match will probably be an underrated match that a lot of people will remember on night two. Austin Theory, as I know for a fact, because I followed his career from day one when he was in Evolve, he can bring it to that match. If they give him enough time to tell the story next Sunday night, I think that'll be a good match. And I like McAfee. I don't know. It's hard to pick a winner there. Because I think, if I'm not mistaken, McAfee is 0-2 against Cole, and also in that War Games match. So we'll see what happens next week. But I could see McAfee actually winning, because most of the time the entertainers / celebrities go over at WrestleMania. But being that he's already in position as a commentator, they could have Theory go over and just build Theory up from there, or they could have Theory lose and piss McMahon off and McMahon punishes Theory. I could see it going both ways. What is your observation on that?
I agree with the love for McAfee. I know he's not everybody's cup of tea, but I enjoy him on commentary, and I enjoy the excitement that he brings. There's a couple things in play in this match, and this kind of goes right into what we're going to talk about next on night two with Pat McAfee versus Austin Theory. The first part is Pat McAfee is an announcer, and the question is he going to wrestle like an announcer, or is he going to wrestle like he wrestled Adam Cole on NXT? They haven't really acknowledged much that that he wrestled that match against Adam Cole, so I'm not sure if that's canon in WWE main roster. So I'm curious as to whether or not McAfee will have the kind of match he had with Adam Cole, or whether he's going to wrestle a different style, because on the WWE main roster, he's an announcer, and he's not an accomplished or qualified wrestler. So that's part one. part two is the potential involvement of Vince McMahon in this match. You know, this was first reported as Vince McMahon versus Pat McAfee. When Vince went on the McAfee show, Vince simply granted McAfee a match, and it was later agreed upon to be Austin Theory, although at some point there was some expectation that Vince would get involved physically in this match in some way. So we don't really know what that's going to entail. We don't know what kind of involvement Vince, if any, is going to end up having in this match and what kind of role it's going to play in the result. So those are the two caveats, Bruce, that I put on talking about this match is what kind of style that Pat is going to wrestle and what kind of involvement Vince McMahon is going to have.
So it's part one. We need to remember that his start at NXT was actually on the pre-shows as a commentator. So he went literally from the commentator booth to the ring in NXT as well. So this would be a similar transition, for lack of a better term. Also, when I think about, he's definitely not Michael Cole in terms of going to get in there with the orange singlet and the headgear and do all that BS. He's more along the lines, not on the same, I'm not trying to say talent level, but in terms of announcers getting in the ring, think about him and Jerry Lawler in kind of the same light, in that they can go when they need to when they get in the ring, when their feuds call for it. And this, I think, should be the first start of that to people who didn't watch Black and Gold. Black and Gold is definitely never canon in WWE. 2.0 will start to be canon, but not Black and Gold, unfortunately. So that's probably why it hasn't been brought up. So for me, he's been fortunate in that he's had Cole, the Undisputed Era, and now Austin Theory to work with, all of whom, even though Theory is still so young, are fantastic workers in the ring. You know, Tom Stott mentions that Theory always seems to know where to be, when to be, all that, even though he's still so young and has those instincts. So it should be a great match in that way. To part two about Vince McMahon being involved, I can see during the match when they both land maybe like a double clothesline or a double crossbody and they're laid out in the ring, Vince marching out to the ring, hopefully not tearing both of his quads, and then, you know, yelling at Theory to do something, and then maybe Theory holds up McAfee for a punch and McMahon goes for a punch but misses him because McAfee moves and he hits Theory, and that leads to McAfee getting the victory over Theory. And then that can be a little more story going into WrestleMania Backlash, where they have a rematch and Theory potentially goes over there. I think he would do a disservice to McAfee with how he presented his character during this feud if he went in there and wrestled like he didn't know what he was doing, even though we've seen in NXT that he can and he knows what he is doing. He was in the NFL, so he has a certain level of athleticism, regardless of what you might think about punters and kickers, that is generally hyped and used as a character building thing within WWE. Think about all the people that have been in football, whether it's college or the pros, and they always hype it, whether it's Big E, Baron Corbin, going back to Goldberg, Stone Cold Steve Austin, mm-hmm. John Cena, like all these people have had these NFL football backgrounds, and that's been hyped. So I think all the makings are there for this to actually be, as you were saying about the women's four-way or the women's tag team four-way match, one of those under the radar good matches on the card on Sunday.
Yeah, good follow-up to those points that I made there. Reverend Keith, always appreciate hearing from you, and hopefully we'll hear from you next week after one or both nights of WrestleMania.
So are you doing shows both nights, Greg, or just Sunday night?
I am, Reverend Keith, Saturday night and Sunday night after both nights of WrestleMania.
Okay. And let me just get this in real quick. I just want to say that even though to me this WrestleMania is a little underwhelming compared to some of the others, I think that some of the matches will kind of parlay into the spectacular, because right now it's just been underwhelming. It's been the same old, I think it's awful the way that they have devalued both the Intercontinental titles and the United States titles. And let's just hope that both Finn and Ricochet gets better treatment after Mania. Thanks for taking my call. Have a great week.
Thank you, Reverend Keith.
Thank you.
All right. We're down to two matches to talk about on night two, since we talked about two of them with Reverend Keith, McAfee versus Theory and Lesnar versus Reigns. Let's head on RK-Bro versus the Street Profits versus the Alpha Academy Raw Tag Team Title Match. Bruce, who knew many moons ago when Riddle and Randy Orton had their first backstage interaction that it would lead to this. Randy Orton's career revitalized, Riddle getting some valuable TV time, and then becoming tag team champions. And honestly, a bright spot on Monday Night Raw in terms of their storylines. Yet here we are. And now they get a WrestleMania match against the Street Profits and Alpha Academy. We've seen RK-Bro and Alpha Academy in different incarnations of matches each week, it seems like, on Monday Night Raw. And now you add the Street Profits to it. I think this is going to be another one of those that it's just going to be a really good match and a really fun match with RK-Bro and the Street Profits both involved.
Yeah, who would have thought that there could be so much more nuance and layers to a cantankerous man like Randy Orton? But that's what has been shown in his partnership with Riddle. It's just sometimes Riddle's humor is just doesn't work for me. But when their interactions, for the most part, I'd say like 85% of the time they work, it's just magic. It just there's just something about how they interact with each other that just makes you like want to keep seeing how they you know, keep going on. And I do think that putting the titles back on them was a mistake at this juncture. I feel like if you wanted them to regain the titles, this should have been the moment to put the titles on them at WrestleMania, back on them, I should say. Because Alpha Academy has been just fantastic since they've been given more time on TV. Chad Gable on the mic, great. Street Profits, there's just not much more to say about them with how talented they are as a team. I just feel like Alpha Academy should have held the title until WrestleMania and then dropped it to one of the face teams. I do think Street Profits, though, are kind of straddling between being a face and being a heel because of their attacks recently, though I'm not sure if that's meant to be read more as they're just trying to get a one-up to get into WrestleMania with the titles. You have RK-Bro retain here and then drop them at Backlash because I think it's too soon after having regained them to drop the titles, even though it is WrestleMania. Here's the thing, though. The tag team depth for the men's division on Raw is just really nothing besides these teams, unless you go back to having like the Viking Raiders built up for a quick pay-per-view match at Backlash or something. But it's just the lack of depth there makes me believe that RK-Bro has to retain because they've been the anchors of the tag team division for the last year plus, and I don't think that should change. But again, I just have a quibble with how the booking got to this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can understand that short tag team title reign for Alpha Academy was kind of strange. I'm not sure really why they did it the way they did it, and I'm not sure that I would have done it that way, but here we are with Orton and Riddle as tag champs heading into WrestleMania. And then our final match, Edge versus AJ Styles. A lot of differing opinions, Bruce, on Edge's performances, and I'm really interested to see where you come down on this. There are people that say that Edge is doing brilliant stuff. He's taking what he's learned in acting from Hollywood, applying it to WWE TV, and really doing work that is above and beyond what anyone else, in terms of mic work, in terms of the acting, and it's above and beyond what anyone else in WWE is doing. There are some who say what he's doing is too heavy-handed. His storyline kind of came out of nowhere. The heel turn came out of nowhere. The mic work hasn't really made up for it. It's too melodramatic. It's too Hollywood. You know, he's trying too hard. So I'm curious as to where you fall on Edge's performances since his heel turn.
I fall more in line with the latter opinion because, I mean, I think it was just one pay-per-view ago, he was teaming with his wife as a face team, right, against The Miz and Maurice.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then all of a sudden, he goes heel. And I do think that while, yes, he's bringing some of the Hollywood stuff, it seems a bit too heavy-handed and, like you said, and a bit forced. So remember when The Undertaker came back as the American Badass and the character was kind of, it was there. There were some good things. There were some bad things. It just didn't seem to mesh well until he kind of later on meshed the dead man and the American Badass together. And I think that's where Edge needs to go. He's kind of gone the full spectrum the other way and becoming this over-brooding heel, not to use a pun about the brood here, but Edge is always good as a heel, but as a weaselly, methodical, meticulous heel, and not as this overbearing, brooding, sadistic heel. And while I think there is space for him to develop into that, the shift was so sudden, and the promos have been a bit too. It's like he's trying to make us believe that he believes in the character disposition that he currently has, and that isn't where Edge on the mic excels. And so for me, I do veer towards that way. I want to see AJ Styles win this match because there has been a slight slip in his agility and athleticism, but damn, he is still so good in the ring. I want to see him get another main event run, whether that's as title challenger or as a title or as a WWE or unified champ, whatever they got to do with that, because he's been doing so well. What he's done in WWE, what he's been asked to, no matter what character, what pairing, what feud he's been in, he has done extremely well. And in the ring, you can't take anything away from him, even though he's into his 40s. So I believe that here, the best thing, especially if Edge wants to continue as this brooding heel, is for him to be overconfident and then lose. And then you still have the feud between them you can build towards, where eventually Edge may overcome and win. But I think the character here needs much more work to making it so that, at least for me, where I believe in him as a character more so than I believe that he's trying to tell me that he is his character.
Yeah.
I hope that makes sense.
That it does. Yeah, for sure. And that's just, you know, WWE's writing of characters and not really fleshing them out and not really giving them a lot of depth and a lot to sink their teeth into. And it's not just Edge that they do that with. You know, we could talk all night about NXT Stand and Deliver. We could preview that show. We could preview ROH Supercard of Honor match by match, but we have simply run out of time for tonight. But if you want to talk about any of those shows, certainly tune in next week when I host the Saturday and Sunday night WrestleMania post shows. Be happy to discuss any of those shows in addition to WrestleMania with you. Or if you see them and want to throw out an email, wnialivecast@gmail.com is where you can do it. Bruce, thanks for joining me tonight. I'll let you go ahead and plug what you do for The Torch and where fans can find you on social media.
Sure. So as Greg said, I am a contributor for The Torch. I do the NXT 2.0 Alt Perspective reports every Tuesday night, usually alongside Kelly Wells' report. There have been some personal things that have happened lately, and one time he got to just go with Wade to watch Mick Foley's show, so there was one reason he didn't do the show, lucky for him. But I do that every Tuesday, and sometimes I will join the PWT Talks NXT crew for the post show after NXT on this same phone line and same everything. So you can catch me there. One thing I will say about Stand and Deliver is that the triple threat tag team match between Imperium, the Creed Brothers, and MSK will probably be the match of the show, if not the ladder match because of all the spots. On Twitter, you can find me at B_Lee253, where I'm usually talking wrestling, but also a lot of sports. With baseball starting soon, definitely going to be on my Giants to hopefully win another division title and then hopefully get another World Series.
Excellent. Bruce, thanks so much for joining me tonight. Really appreciate you being on one of our biggest shows of the year, honestly, which is where we preview both nights of WrestleMania. So appreciate your insight tonight.
Well, thank you for the invite and for trusting me with one of your biggest shows.
Absolutely. Pleasure to have you on. And don't forget, Saturday and Sunday night next week, we'll be on for Wrestling Night in America. And again, use that email, wnialivecast@gmail.com. I know both nights of WrestleMania are going to get over late. If you're watching NXT during the day and can't wait up to call in with your thoughts, send us an email. Same with ROH on Friday night, wnialivecast@gmail.com. I am Greg Parks. You can find me on Twitter @GregMParks. And that's all for me for this week. Don't forget to tune in next week because if it's Sunday and Saturday next week, it's Wrestling Night in America.